Hey folks, welcome back. This is Channel 9 Live. We are at Tech in New Orleans with my esteemed colleagues, Matthias Shapiro and Larry Lieberman. Guys, how you doing? This is our Windows Phone session. So for folks who don't know you, obviously I know you all deeply. Why don't you explain your role at Microsoft so people kind of get a background?
So I'm Windows Phone Technical Evangelist. I build demos, I write a lot of the talks that we give, and I know everything. I am the man.
Yes, sure. And you clearly have humble and...
I try.
He meets the bar in terms of humble at Microsoft.
Yes, right. Yes. Now, Larry, what would you say you do here?
Well, I don't necessarily know everything.
Okay,
however,
okay.
I'm a product manager in Windows Phone Org, responsible for developer education. And so one of the main things I do is try to coordinate all our efforts around developer education, the sessions we do at conferences like TechEd and Build, and a lot of the online content we publish, the documentation, and so forth and so on like that. Trying to make sure developers have what they need to build apps and games for Windows Phone.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So this is, again, an interactive session. Make sure to send us your question. Anything related to Windows Phone, clearly Matthias thinks he can answer. If you have differential equations, trigonometry homework,
that's
whatever
right. Philosophy.
It is. He will figure that out. Otherwise, we'll just talk Windows Phone stuff. So I'll kind of throw it out to you all. So you've both been giving talks. What have your talks been on? What has been kind of the reaction from attendees?
Well, I've been talking about building for both Windows Phone and Windows 8, pulling that together. So how do we use portable class libraries? How do we use the model view model structure in order to build applications where we can share code across all of our devices?
I think you downplayed it because... You know, with Windows Phone 8, we moved to this shared core with Windows.
Right.
And so there's an opportunity to leverage the same code to build applications and games for both.
Yeah.
And so people are really excited about this. It means, you know, a lot of your work can be used to build and bring solutions to both all of the Windows tablets and all of the Windows phones.
Yeah, I mean, basically the entire device ecosystem is in one place, and we can go in there and share enormous amounts of code, enormous amounts of our services can all be in one place so that we don't have to rewrite a lot of our, you know, going out to the network and getting data back and managing that data. All that can be in one place, and we've got it moving across all of our devices, laptops, tablets, phones, everything.
Your session was like about all those core strategies that we...
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things, and obviously a lot of people are familiar with portable class libraries, there's the way to basically make things work on both.
Right.
And they, you know, people have been saying, hey, the one thing my app does is it talks to the internet. How do I build something that works so that it talks to the internet? So the HTTP client classes haven't been portable, if you will. So what's kind of been the answer there?
So my answer has been, we have a HTTP client that is, it's in beta.
No, last week. Yeah, last week it released.
Oh, released. Okay, it's released now.
So how do you get it?
You get it through NuGet.
Yep. Okay.
If you're familiar with NuGet, you can just actually, you don't have to change NuGet to look at pre-release anymore. Yeah. You just go into NuGet in your Visual Studio session and you type in HTTP and it'll come right up on top.
And so the idea there is that is one library to rule them all for all web.
Yep, you build your service, you pull your HTTP client in there, and then you just write it one time. You get your posts, and everything works across a Silverlight and Windows 8 and Windows Store and Windows Phone. It's beautiful.
You get to use Async Await.
Right. That's right. We do have the Async Await in the HTTP client. So
instead of old style background,
it's really easy.
Yes, no more waiting for that callback to complete it.
Yeah, no, it's
marshaling
been,
threads.
And for those folks who happen to have questions on async, we're actually going to have, I think, Alex Turner at 5 o'clock-ish or maybe 4:30 to 5 here. So he'll be answering questions.
Cool.
So kind of related to that, what were you actually showing in terms of demos, like in terms of an app that could work, you know, or that shared core that would work on both?
So I had a, if you're familiar with the Philips Hue lights, you did it in your demo, right? It's basically a Wi-Fi enabled LED lights. You can set the brightness, you can set the colors, and you can set whether or not you turn it on and off. And I built an application that communicated with these lights, and the vast bulk of the application was built in portable class libraries. All the services that go out and, and come back, the commands that you do to set the lights, and the, let's see, what else did I do in there? All the properties, the view model, I mean, huge amounts of this application were just built in portable class library. The only thing that I used to go outside of that was occasionally you need to do some stuff that's kind of OS-centric, and portable class libraries, it's kind of outside that scope. And so things like a dispatcher timer, some storage stuff, storing user data, that we had to move into shared files. We couldn't put it in the portable class library, we had to move in the project files. But still, we were using the same view model across both platforms.
So some people kind of have this reaction of view models, it's like view and view models, like, right. I like me some code behind. Like,
right.
Do you say, like, is it a, hey, let's default to view and view models because it's going to be that much easier for that portability across both, or
right.
multiple targets, or is it just personal preference, or how do you say somebody who says kind of have an allergic reaction to do view models and
right.
view like model locators and a lot of the
right.
different abstractions
right.
where it just becomes I'm writing code
mm-hmm.
to test my code is
yeah.
fine, but then
right.
you can go kind of to the nth degree and it gets
much less yeah. commanding and dependency properties.
Right. Yes,
so,
right. yes.
Like,
right.
So MVVM is a topic of great fear and uncertainty in
yeah.
the universe, because
yeah.
we've talked about it forever, and yet at the same time, most presentations on MVVM I've seen, I can completely understand someone walking away and saying, why would I ever do that? Because
right.
there's a lot of additional work, and especially when you're showing introductory scenarios, you come away with a hello world that takes an hour to build.
Right, right.
It's like, hello world in an hour.
That's why the demo that I have.
It's true.
Which
is why
right.
it I think can be difficult when you're trying to explain the concepts. But,
right.
but go ahead.
So. Oh, the demo I have, which we're going to put up on CodePlex, the thing I like about it is that it's not a hello world. You know, we've got real services in here that are doing real things. We've got views. We got two different views. They're not totally different views. You know, they look very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But they are very different from one another, totally unique XAML. With the exact same bindings and using the exact same commands. And so I really like my demo because I think it takes the MVVM and it does something that's real and serious, but it also has an enormous amount of simplicity.
Yeah.
To it. And so
you've set up some macros too that you generally use for property notify change and so forth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got some.
So are you using Laurent Bunyon's MVVM Lite?
I mean, I'm actually using his MVVM in the demo. I'm using his MVVM Lite to give me the relay commands.
Okay.
And one of the things I think a lot of people don't get is with MVVM Lite, it's not an all or nothing proposition. You can pull it in and say, I really like the relay commands, because
mm-hmm.
then I don't have to write a command class for every single command that I want to do. Or, the view model locator is really great because it gives me the design time data, but I don't want to use, I don't want to use this other thing. And so I actually use a bit of a hybrid. I use his relay commands for stuff, to do my commanding, but then I use the more traditional, more standard iNotify property changed. I don't use his view model locator, and so,
The standard practices.
Right, just
yeah,
the standard
he designed
practices.
It to be factored in such
yep.
a way, and he does have the nice code snippets, so I think
mm-hmm.
it's like
yeah,
INPC,
the code snippets are,
so it's
yeah.
like, oh,
yeah, oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Tab.
Yeah,
yeah
as
yeah.
opposed to
yeah.
having to know the exact syntax.
Yeah.
A lot of boilerplate
yeah.
code all over for these.
There is, and I think that's one of the challenges, too.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where if you can get over that hump of understanding, then you're in this kind of really great zone where it's just, you're creating a property with five keystrokes and two tabs.
Right.
And then you just down, 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 property, 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 command, command. And you can very, very quickly get a view model that's fast and powerful and works across your views. And then, so what I'd end up doing is I'll spend an hour building my view model, and then I'll go and work on my views. I started out as a UX designer,
mm-hmm.
and so that's where I really have my fun, is when I'm going in, I'm making my XAML, and I'm doing my bindings, and moving things around, and making it look cool.
MVVM
yeah.
is really at the core of our code, our leverage, maximize code reuse strategy with Windows and Windows Phone. So
sure.
it's going to be really important for us to help folks understand the criticality of it, and make it as easy as possible for people to implement.
But is that a requirement? In other words,
no.
I could still have
no.
portable class libraries, I could still have code behind.
Oh.
There's going to be some things that probably are a little more
Common APIs. If you factor common APIs appropriately, you can
right.
reuse code pretty easily.
Yep.
We have 2,200 shared WinRT APIs across the two.
Right.
That's 2,200 for those of you keeping score at home. And speaking of at home, we do have some questions. I'll read them to you. And I don't know which one he wants to take this first question, which is more of a general phone question from
sure.
Webster Alfonso asks, any news on VPN for Windows Phone?
You might be surprised to hear that we actually got that question here at TechEd. or not.
Yeah.
Right. No, we got.
Someone mentioned it.
Look, I think what you need to know is that certainly with Windows Phone 8, for the very first time, we've unblocked a majority of the scenarios required for the enterprise. We know that, you know, with Windows Phone and the reset of Windows Phone, we had to go back and really target the consumer experience.
Sure.
And that left a lot of enterprises in the dark for a while. And finally, we've come back with 8, and we've got this great product, you know, built on the shared core. It's got NT-based security across the entire operating system. You got BitLocker. You've got, you know, I could go on and on. I won't.
Sure, sure.
It's the basic IT pro stuff, and there's been some sessions that focus squarely on that. But software is software. It's the sausage-making factory. There are things that don't necessarily get into a particular release. Mm-hmm. And as we know, VPN isn't there in Windows Phone 8 today. We look at what's important to our audiences. And you can draw distinctions from that about how critical things are and where they fall in our priorities.
Sure.
And so I think I just want people to know that we're listening and we're going to do everything we can to drive those features in as quickly as we can.
Okay, good. So it sounds like promising. How's that?
We want to solve the key issues for enterprise with the phone. And we think we've got a large number of them solved. But certainly VPN is something that we've heard very loud and clear is a critical thing.
Okay. Well, thank you, Webster, Alfonso, for the question. The next one's Ronald Walcott asks, designing an enterprise application, considering using Windows Phone and tablets for our out-of-office workers, don't want the apps in the Windows Store, read somewhere that licenses are needed. So this is probably more of a, how do I distribute Windows Store apps?
It sounds like it.
Okay.
Although Windows Phone has a store as well, and we can very well speak to, in Windows Phone 8, we've added enterprise deployment. And this means an enterprise no longer has to go through the process of submitting their application to the public store. They can actually distribute their apps however they want in their own enterprise. They can use something like Intune or a website internally or a file share internally or even email. But you're right. The first thing that has to happen is they have to actually acquire a certificate from Symantec as our partner here. And the process is documented really well on our online portal, dev.windowsphone.com. If you go there as an enterprise, you can go and seek out this, get this certificate that enables you to sign your apps locally and distribute them locally.
So, you know, one of the challenges is developers probably are more familiar with, say, like dev.windows.com APIs. They're not really familiar on the last part, which is the deployment, which obviously, ironically, in Tekkit, there's a number of people. So you mentioned Intune.
Yeah.
A lot of people may not even know what Intune, a lot of developers, I should say, may not know what it is. Can you just kind of elaborate on that?
Well, and I'm not the Intune product manager either. Yeah. So, so
Matthias will know because he knows everything.
Intune is one of our management products. It's a server product that allows you to manage devices in your enterprise. Windows Phone is among those devices that you can manage.
Perfect. How's that? All right, there you go. So that's kind of the short answer there, at least in terms of using Windows Phone for app deployment.
Absolutely, yep.
Great.
So, yeah.
So keep the questions coming as they go on. You know, we were talking about some of the other things, you know, from an app perspective, and I know you were giving a session. Yours was kind of like the overview.
It was a high level overview.
Yeah. So what are the common things, you know, because people maybe have a view of Windows Phone from Windows Phone 7. What are some of the common things, like, hey, just so you know, we have this, like you mentioned, async await as being like, I think, a very interesting one where people have this misconception they can't do that in Windows Phone. What are some of the common things that developers really need to know about is available on the platform?
If we're talking about enterprise developers, I think it's critical to talk about the deployment mechanisms, device management mechanisms, the security of the phone, everything siloed, very similar to some of the things in Windows Store. We're a little bit ahead of Windows Store in some respects because we've been released for a little bit longer than Windows 8. But there were a lot of new features in Windows Phone 8 that some folks don't know about. All of it really ties into enabling developers to build better connections with their users. Mm-hmm. Because one of the biggest issues developers face, users can get apps pretty easily through the store these days. There's a store, it's published on every device, you can go get the apps. And there's a lot of apps there. But most apps, and there's a lot of data showing this, most apps get installed once, get installed and then used once or twice and never touched again.
Right.
So what we've done in Windows Phone is we built this platform whereby we actually enable developers to promote their apps, to develop connections with users in contextually relevant ways. So specifically, live tiles. You can create a tile, user sees it all the time when they turn on their phone, and then the lock screen. In Windows Phone 8, we added a dynamic lock screen. An application developer can be a lock screen provider and can basically configure the entire lock screen to show whatever they want on a periodic basis.
Now, you actually have a lock screen app.
Oh, well, there's,
right?
Yeah.
So I think it's camera four. Where should you point the, see, if you can see yourself there, Larry, on the
monitor. I do. So this is a lock screen. You'll see that there's a map showing. This is my current location, and it's also showing the current traffic for our location. So I actually think that's a pretty compelling app myself. Not that I need to know where I am all the time. But this one's called Map Wallpaper from Martin Nielsen. Yeah. Morten Nielsen. What he's done here is he's just getting a new map every half hour and throwing it up on your lock screen. Real simple map, and you can pick a number of different maps. They have topographic maps. They have aerial view maps. They've got a bunch of different maps you can use there. And, you know, certainly not a complicated app, but yet it's a scenario that drives engagement with the user. They see it all the time, and it's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah, very cool.
Well, it's one of those things where when you kind of look at Windows Phone from the perspective of we're building it for developers, and that really, to me, once I have that perspective in mind, a lot of the other things kind of fall into place. All of the background agent work that we've done,
yeah,
the wallpapers, the fact that
it all comes back to the philosophy, though, right?
Right.
Because end user is king. That is like the cornerstone philosophy. And we want to build outstanding end user experiences. We want to enable developers to deliver outstanding end user experiences. And that means balancing interests. Like, we don't have a blanket multitasking. You can't just run any process in the background at any time. We have a number of structured mechanisms, like background agents, that allow you to fire off a process on a periodic basis, or if the phone is plugged in, or if it's on Wi-Fi, so you can do it conditionally. And we have background audio as well. We have a number of other ones, notification, transfer.
Well, one of my favorites is the lock screen notifications. Basically, you pick your five favorite apps, and you get notifications straight on your lock screen, and it's available to any developer who can do it and convince their user to engage it.
Well,
this is actually a really good question, which is, what are some of the features that you see in app developers today that they're probably not taking advantage of? Like, hey, you know, here's an awesome app. I just wish it had one feature. Like, one example I do, you know, there's an app called Phone Cowboy. There's a website called Team Cowboy. There's a way that allows you to, say, manage if you're playing in a soccer team or whatever your sporting event. There's APIs to get at your calendar and actually at calendar events as people at Microsoft live in their calendar. I just wish there was a button to say, hey, add this to my calendar, for example, and to be able to get more notifications.
So. Yeah, we added in 8 the ability to do this, actually.
Right.
You actually are creating a new store, a new calendar data store, because you can't manipulate the existing store.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it'll show up in the user's calendar. So they're absolutely, that's one that folks don't necessarily leverage.
Well, one that I really would love to see in more applications is something that I use very frequently is I have a text message, and I'm driving and I'm not texting. I'm using the audio button, you know, speak. Get your speech into that. We have speech APIs so that implementing that, if you want to implement that into a Twitter application, it's literally like 5 lines of code.
Speech is one of these areas of innovation that people are not necessarily jumping into yet, because I think it's a different paradigm a little bit.
Very much.
A different interaction paradigm that I think takes a little bit more thought to actually execute on, but it's so easy with our speech API. There's really 3 different things it provides. We've got voice commands.
Right.
You don't have to be online at all for this to work. You just define a small dictionary in your app and leverage that, and you can just have the user speak to your app with those commands, and it will just work.
One of my favorite examples of that was actually at our last hackathon, the Build hackathon, where the ReadyClick app, where the person was basically giving commands to say, for example, turn the flash on and off, with the camera, and it's actually in the store if people want to play with it today. But just a great example, and the actual amount of code to do that was just, you know, probably
tiny.
So small.
Exactly. It's a really easy.
All the work's done for you from an API perspective.
I know. Yeah. The other 2 scenarios, though, are full speech recognition. If you're online, you can actually then call an API. If the phone's online, you can call API to actually transcribe all the text out.
Yeah.
And then the third one, speech synthesis, where you can have your app speak out whatever text you feed it. So there's a lot of functionality there.
All right, so we support 8, 9 languages?
Something like that at this point. It's adding more all the time.
Yeah, it's really powerful, and I use it in a lot of things just because it's so easy. It's kind of like, oh, well, is there a scenario here where speech makes sense? Okay, well, that was a half-hour implementation, and now I'm done.
Right, right. So we have some more questions. Let's make sure they're getting your audio. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Is that good? Yeah. All right.
Okay.
That's my job. All right. So, Bill asks, I'm on a call. I need my phone battery to last all day, say 18 hours, without stopping to charge. If the application drains the battery, what's the point? You can build killer apps, but if they're heavy power draws, they're all but useless. How are you building power savings into your phone app? So how do you make sure that developers are actually doing things for that to save your battery? Or as an end user, what are the things that you can do to prevent and maximize your battery life?
No, that's a fantastic question because it speaks to the distinctiveness of writing for mobile device. You know, the number one issue here is testing your application. The other thing, though, is about how we've designed our platform in terms of background processes.
Right.
Because generally when you see huge battery issues on other platforms, oftentimes it has to do with something that's installed itself as a service that's just going on in the background forever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have done so much work in Windows Phone to drive up battery life, and it's not just exclusive to the platform. It's exclusive to the entire operating system. It's an issue. There's so much going on in terms of what the mobile device does. And a ton of work has gone into testing this operating system in a more comprehensive manner. At the time 7 came out, it was the most tested operating system Microsoft ever released.
Nice.
From a system hour perspective, because there's literally rooms and rooms, locked rooms, with hundreds and hundreds of phones running automation processing to test out different performance and battery life scenarios to try to find every bottleneck possible to then be surmounted. So a ton of work has gone in there, and we have to work with our OEM partners as well, because so much of this has to do with the driver layer.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you actually see some of the biggest performance and battery suck issues. It has to do with how things are activated, how you turn on and off the Wi-Fi radio, how you leverage the camera appropriately. So all those things are so important, and because of our, you know, we work with OEMs on these things, it sometimes takes us a little bit longer to get those things together and out and done. But you know, this is a number one priority for us in a lot of the things we do, and
right.
You know.
And I think some of those things are really hard to know exactly what is causing the battery drain. So for example,
right.
Like if you are between, you know, cell towers at a specific area and your phone is switching back and forth,
yep.
That can actually cause a battery drain. So,
absolutely.
So that can just be some things that are effectively out of your control.
The nature of how LTE works.
Yeah, as Larry said, in terms of testing your app, if you run the, we have a testing suite inside of Visual Studio. If you run that, it will actually tell you, oh, your application is doing this, 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 and this, and that's where you're pushing out battery here.
You're talking about the profiler.
Yeah, the profiler.
We have
yeah.
a visual profiler in Visual Studio now, Visual Studio 2012. You actually can run your application in the visual profiler. And we highly recommend, by the way, that you do it with a real device
yes,
as opposed to the emulator.
Absolutely.
Because the performance characteristics are
awesome.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
The emulator is fantastic, but when you're getting down to testing performance and things like battery life impact,
yeah.
Nothing beats a real device, and you
yeah.
can use any device. Any retail acquired device can be used for development once you unlock it. If you register, pay your $99, you get the ability to unlock 10 devices.
Yep.
You know, that's essentially what folks should be doing.
Yeah, but it's really powerful and very easy to use, and I love it. It's
you
great.
Can
it's
drill in very, very tight into specific calls and find
yep.
out exactly where different performance bottlenecks are taking place.
Yeah.
Great. So we have another question here from Anil Mahadev, any plans to have more ready-made templates for building WP8 much more faster? So more design time, drag and drop and configure, less reliant on code customization. So that's kind of the first part. And then the other part is also, will the current WP8 devices be able to run later 8.1 versions?
Oh.
Thanks.
Yeah, we've actually already publicly said this. All existing Windows Phone 8 devices will run future versions.
Hey, all right, there you go. We'll say it again, and it sounds like a huge announcement.
Well, all existing Windows Phone 8 devices will be able to run the next version. So,
yes, that's awesome.
It's something we've been saying for a while. We know we had a big break going to 8. It was painful and unfortunate, but sometimes you have to make those decisions in order to move forward. And for us, this was getting on the Windows core, so it was like a gigantic thing we had to do. We are not going to be doing that.
Okay.
Again. There, so if we can avoid it.
There are some templates out there.
If
Go ahead. There's the MVVM Lite has a lot of great templates.
But I think he's looking for more like drag and drop coding pre-built designs.
There's a bunch of starter kits.
Contoso panorama style kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, there is a panorama and pivot template in the box.
But you know what I mean. That gives you kind of like the real basic. There's items, but the Contoso version would have a fake data binding and all that wonderful stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's the one that I'm thinking of right now is a little bit kind of off to the side, but the PhoneGap has some great templates. Mm-hmm. So if you install PhoneGap onto your machine, you can build Windows Phone 8 applications with HTML and JavaScript, but they have just templates, and you pull in the template, and you put it down, and away you go. So that's one example. There are
there's a bunch of stuff on Codeplex, too.
Yeah, there are I would say Codeplex is the way to go. And just look through
on Codeplex, you get up 3,000 things. And I think, you know, sort by popularity, you can start to see the things that are more more relevant and interesting.
Yeah.
You know, totally, your point is taken that it certainly could be easier. In some areas, there are a lot of easier tools to use. We've been partnering in the game space, for example, with Unity.
Right.
The Unity tool set is incredibly easy to start with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it's a great point. So for people who aren't familiar with Unity, and, you know, we have about 2 minutes more, but can you give kind of the quick and dirty, especially if somebody's looking for design time?
Right.
That
well,
seems like a great
here's the thing. Example. Unity just announced that they are going to have a free level subscription for independent developers.
Right, right.
Which is amazing because this is a powerful tool. You know, Unity says about 53% of all mobile games, Android, iOS, are built using their tools.
Right.
So they have enormous penetration. Very, very, very cool, easy to use tool set that allows you to put together 3D scenes and animations and interaction patterns. With very, very little work. We have a whole course on Channel 9, I think, about...
Yeah, we did a live event.
And it's on-demand now.
Yeah.
So you can go look on-demand about building games for Windows and Windows Phone using Unity. This is where the alignment between the two platforms actually is the highest, is in the D3D game space.
Yeah.
We have a number of game developers who are telling us they're sharing about 80 to 90% of their code today across Windows and Windows Phone.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And that's why you're starting to see games come out on Windows Phone at the same time as Windows and even as iOS and Android because so many people are able to leverage the native platform to bring things over so quickly. In Unity, it's as much as a drop-down box, I've heard. So
yeah, and especially to Neil's question, it is design first.
Yes.
So you're writing scripts that act on the world, but it is design first. So it's a great thing for people that are looking for sort of a visual environment for building stuff. So I know we're running out of time, but to plug, so one, your Twitters and sites for people to go visit.
Sure. The key site to go to is dev.windowsphone.com. We that's where we focus our energy in terms of maintaining a relationship with our developer audience. My Twitter's at Larry A. Lieberman.
And at Matthias Schaap.
Right. And we actually host the Inside Windows Phone show on Channel 9, so... You can see us there
on Thursdays.
We try to get it every Thursday, but it's usually about every other Thursday right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both. This has been a great session.
Thanks
I appreciate
for having
your
us.
Time. All right. Thanks, everyone.